Okay. Hi, everybody, and good evening here from Durango, Colorado. Traveling at the time of Thanksgiving, and hopefully to see my children, and hopefully the upload speed is adequate. If not, you can all improvise. Anyway, we have some very interesting things tonight. We're really working on a, you know how we went into first the technique of light because it was what we were specifically using. And it is maybe a little easier to understand than the technique of the presence, which has to do with higher aspects of our nature than most of us are able to contact at will. But it's the origin of the whole thing, and tonight we'll try to do a little work on the nature of the intuition since it is so connected with the technique of the presence. And let's see if Brett, if Carl has a question or a problem, please take a look at it and see. So I want to welcome you all here. I know we'll have more joining us, but Alex, Annette, Ario, Carl, Catherine, Ecclesia, Dacia, Frederick, Holly, Jean, Joan, Schofield, John, Yoke, Karen, Linda, Lynn, Marianne, Mariut, Martha. Something happened to Rebecca Frith. Oh no, there she is. She's not. Hi, Rebecca. And Risto, Stacia, Vera, and Winnie, and then Brett and Joe and I are here on the staff to assist. So let's just have a, and there'll be more joining us, and I won't, welcome to everybody, but I won't be able to do that all the way through. And Alex, I hope I got you there at the very beginning. Okay, let's have a little, and let's see. Yeah. We will have little alignments. With the idea that we're all working together here to understand the nature of the clarification of consciousness. And there are many ways that consciousness can be obscured. And over the centuries, we maybe have been clarifying these obscurations, and also there's much more to be done. So much of what seems natural to us is simply misperception of reality, but it's so customary that we think it's normal and real. But as we align more and more with the soul, we are in a position to lift the veils. And we're always amazed, was that there all the time? The revelation, says the Tibetan, is of that which always is present. We just don't see it. And we don't, and until we lift a veil and enter into a deeper and more extensive perception, we don't know that we have been blind. So may the scales fall from our eyes. And may we learn what it's like to perceive above the 18 lower subplanes and eventually into the cosmic etheric body, of our planetary logos, where the principles of our solar system and what we can call reality really begin. And so we'll pay attention to DK's words, and we will then have some opportunity for thought and sharing thought, and then we will have our usual dissipation of glamour meditation, still working on the problem of the divisive forces operating through hatred and the sense of separativeness or separateness, whichever way. If DK says that the great heresy of separateness is the one great heresy, then it's got to be the root of a lot of problems. Probably it is not solved only through the dissipation of glamour. It's got to be solved more fundamentally through the dispelling of illusion. And upon illusion, we are now working. And it will take months for us to work through what he has to say about it, and maybe even longer to really understand it. So let's just sound an om together to solidify our will to work together in a manner which is meant to help humanity clarify its consciousness. Saying hello to Bio, and a few more people have joined us. I'm not sure I can see everybody. Did I say Karen, Lynn? Anyway, if you join a little late, you may miss the roll call. and then, you know, when we talk, you can write a message or raise your hand or something, whatever. So look, we finished here. It's about the unfoldment of, let's see, where are we? Yeah, I hope I put this in the right place. I think so. Yes, I did. So I mean to get through a fair amount of material tonight. Let's just see how we do. The last paragraph we read that about the factor of the gradual development of the human mind through the, can I add, very slow processes of evolution itself. So this might be regarded as the innate capacity of that which we call mind, the citta, or mind stuff, to become ever more and more sensitive to the impact of the phenomenal world. We're talking about the lower 18 subplanes, and we're talking about that aspect of the human mind, which is what we call the lower mind, focused on the lower four subplanes of the mental plane. So more sensitive first to the phenomenal world and later to the impression of the higher worlds of being, which are, you know, what can we say, the noumenal worlds, phenomenal and noumenal. Phenomenal are an outward expression, noumenal has to do with the reality of the pattern behind the outer expression. The mind is the instrument which registers the process of becoming. But it is also, during the later stages of human unfoldment, capable of registering the nature or function of being, being and becoming. The old Greek philosophers introduced us to these ideas. The archetypal world, on the monadic and logoic planes, that's the world of being, the archetypal world where God's purpose is stored and is invariable, though the plan varies, and the world of constant mutability below, the monadic and logoic planes, and especially the lower 18 subplanes, which really are comprised of the matter of a previous solar system. So becoming, you know, most of us are living all the time in the world of becoming, and we have time, and we have change, and we have process, constant mutability, and the mutable cross, if you will, in astrology. Becoming is revealed through the medium of the intellect. The intellect is focused on the four lower mental subplanes, especially the fourth and the fifth, unless we define intellect in a still higher way, as some philosophers do, and make of it the true intuition. Being, on the other hand, through the medium of the intuition, works through the medium of the intuition, and we access the sense of being, which is absolutely fundamental, through the medium of the intuition. If, you know, somehow the isness of things, regardless of what they are, what their quality is, whether they're good, whether they're bad, doesn't make any difference. It's the isness of things which the intuition reveals, and that is the true reality of things. And through that isness, if you will, whatever words work for you, through that isness, the true nature of all perceptions is revealed. All perceptions are, in fact, derived from being and are being itself. All perceptions are. In all study of illusion, the instrumental nature of the mind must be remembered, and its power to register accurately, to interpret and transmit knowledge coming from the world of phenomena, and wisdom from the realm of the soul. So we really need to use the mind in a higher way. Now let's just see, I hope I didn't, in my eagerness, I hope I didn't skip. Well, you know, this is basically, we discussed this before. And by the way, I meant to start a little bit earlier, and I will. It's all about the technique of the presence. We discussed it, okay? But a couple of things are necessary to repeat. Illusion must not be confounded with glamour. Illusion is related to the whole process of revelation. Glamour can be and often is related to the distortion of that which has been revealed. But what has been revealed? Now, the distortion is a twisting out of shape and out of a relative size and value of that which has been revealed. But it must be borne in mind that illusion is primarily concerned with the reactions of the mind to the unfolding revelation. And if we're not careful, the mind, trained as it is in misperception at first, will reveal to us a revelation which is not accurate. So the revelation may be there all the time, but the mind distorts it and becomes the slayer of the real. So to the unfolding revelation, as the soul registers it and seeks to impress it on the highest aspect of the lower personal self. Now, if we could only, in the Letters on Occult Meditation, Master DK said, okay, we fail in our meditation because we cannot meditate within the causal body. Meditating within the causal body as a sure and secure method, which is always reliable, is the quality of the person who has achieved the third initiation. They can always focus on the higher mental plane, and they see reality in a way much more true than those who are still confounded by illusions in the world of lower mental perceptions. So this is very good. Illusion is therefore the failure of the mind correctly to register, to interpret, or translate that which has been transmitted. Even reality can be transmitted, but if the mind distorts it, then we will always have the wrong apprehension. So the mind will give us the wrong context, the wrong value of things in relation to each other, wrong relations in general. We won't know where a thing came from. We won't know really where it's going. We will exaggerate its importance or minimize its importance. We will just misunderstand. And later, DK tells us quite a bit about the seven types of illusion, and we're going to get into that. So it's the sin of the more mental type, highly developed people. And if I can put it like this about illusion, the true archetypal relation relationships between things as God, our planetary logos, has conceived them to be is simply not seen. Now, if we were monads on the whose consciousness was liberated onto the sixth thermonadic plane, we would see the archetypes, we would even be the archetypes, we would know how things truly are related in the mind of God. Short of that, even in the realm of the triad, we don't yet see. So, you know, we're standing on the path, becoming rightly oriented. We are, some of us may be accepted disciples. We're seeking to expand our soul contact, but still it's our sin. We still miss the boat. We still don't see things as they really, really are. Otherwise, maybe DK wouldn't have had to write all those letters to his disciples. When they have seen through illusion, and this requires the intuition, the dispelling of illusion, and he's using it in the esoteric sense, then they are ready for the third initiation. Now, I just wanted to include this, which I didn't include last time. He's talking about hints. If you follow the hints, and I think there are seven hints in that manual for initiation called Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, if you follow the hints, it will evoke the intuition. Now, initiation is never taken unless the intuition is becoming active. And what does it mean by initiation? It doesn't mean the threshold initiations. Initiations are the threshold. No, he means the true first initiation, which is the third degree. And now he says something very, very important. It's a little section which I often bring up in class and so forth. Spiritual instinct, the lowest aspect of the intuition, indicates readiness for the first initiation. We sense and we know there is a higher power. There's something there. There's something more than what we see, and we are led to pursue it. Now, an illumined mind and spiritual intelligence are the definite signs that a man can take the second initiation. Maybe, regardless of what the ray may be, but certainly there's certain other rays, certain rays which deal more with the illumination of the mind and with spiritual intelligence. But he says it as a generality. An illumined mind and spiritual intelligence are the definite sign that a man can take the second initiation, whilst spiritual perception or intuitive instinct. Now think about those words. Spiritual perception, which already, you know, indicates the soul and the spiritual triad, interestingly enough. Here, let me just get this correctly. Okay. Signifies preparedness for the transfiguration, the third initiation. And maybe when we get into the spiritual triad in our consciousness, we go beyond normal form and figure. And we go beyond form as it is usually conceived, and we begin to sense the more causal energy forms, which lie behind everything we call form. So put that down in your collection of DK references, which you think are important. It's all about spiritual instinct, an illumined mind and spiritual intelligence, and also spiritual perception or intuitive instinct. Those are the three factors described in a rather different way, which talk about when we can take the first, second, and third initiation. Now, it's pretty obvious that when we work on glamour, we're working to create an illumined mind and spiritual intelligence. So many of DK's students were working towards the second initiation, and that's what they had to have. They had to have those things particularly. And, you know, maybe some are also, you know, cultivating the true intuition, which will reveal the third degree, although among Master DK's students, maybe only two or three had reached that point in their unfoldment. So those are important points. It's all about, our theme is about revelation. And we can work with the world illusion and also the individual illusion as well. And, you know, we just have to know more. And we have not to see according to the prevailing erroneous interpretations. We have to find our own interpretations in the light of the soul. Or we have to understand the interpretation that DK has given us in the light of the soul. So, okay, so I read this other thing before. and now am ready to jump way back to page 2 of the same book, The Glamour of World Problem, where he really begins to clarify what is the intuition. Now, some of you are familiar with this section, but it's a section which really warrants repeated reading and analysis and so forth. The intuition is not a welling forth of love to people, that's very good, of course, and therefore an understanding of them. Okay, that kind of thing exists, but it's not the intuition as he sees it. Let me see if I have anything to write down. I will get a little bracket here and copy it. Much that is called intuition is the recognition of similarities and the possession of a clear analytical mind. So, you know, the clear analytical mind is often using the fifth-rate component, the recognition of similarities and differences, but especially of similarities, the fourth ray in the mind. Intelligent people who have lived in the world for some time and who have experienced much and who have contacted many other people can usually sum up with facility the problems and dispositions of others, provided they are interested. This must not, however, be confounded with the intuition. So a knowledge of human nature, we sometimes say, oh, I have an intuition about this person, is often based upon our experience and many lives and many people, and just using our illumined mind and analytical abilities to see how people are. So intuition is something else, at least as DK is describing it, no matter how we tend to use it loosely. The intuition has no relation to psychism, either higher or lower. Although, you know, there is a relation between the astral plane of psychism and the Buddhic plane of intuition, and provided that the images and the findings on the plane, on the astral plane, are sufficiently clear and based on reality, they may be a conduit to the intuition, but not glamour. It will not conduct you to the intuition. So, no relation to psychism, either higher or lower. The seeing of a vision, the hearing of the voice of the silence, you know, coming from the soul, a pleased reaction to the teaching of any kind does not infer the functioning of the intuition. So, you know, what we have to begin to do is discard our usual definitions of intuition. I think it's very important because as students of the Ageless Wisdom, we have to begin to be accurate in our understanding and not use words loosely, but use the words as they would be presented by the hierarchy to represent what hierarchy understands. It is not only the seeing of symbols that's related, for that is a special sort of perception and the capacity to tune in on the universal mind. Well, where is the universal mind? You know, at least on the atmic plane and beyond. So it's a special sort of perception, the seeing of symbols, upon that layer of its activity which produces the pattern forms on which all etheric bodies are based. Now, this is actually a high type of ability, and DK trains people in the use of the intuition through the use of symbols. It's a doorway, but it's not yet the real thing. It is not intelligent psychology and a loving desire to help. All those things are very important, but it's not yet the intuition. That emanates from the interplay of a personality governed by a strong soul orientation and the group conscious soul. So we have to have that. We have to have that orientation towards the soul and a group conscious soul. Now here comes the definition. And this is something that we might well ponder, you know, for many a year and work towards an understanding of it. Intuition is the synthetic understanding which is the prerogative of the soul. And what is the real soul, of course? The real soul is actually the triad. It's the true ego. Okay? So what we usually call the soul is the soul in its sheath, which we call the causal body, the egoic lotus. And that's not... There's truer souls or truer types of consciousness than that. Okay? So intuition is the synthetic understanding, which is the prerogative of the soul, and that only becomes possible when the soul on its own level is reaching in two directions. So that's how much DK has in his italics. The soul is reaching on its own level towards the monad and towards the integrated and perhaps, even if only temporarily, coordinated and at one personality. It only becomes possible when this dual direction. So you know, we do a lot of work in some of the groups, like in the group called Identify as Being. We do work to reach towards the monad, towards holistic, homogeneous, non-divisive perception, but also towards the intelligent, integrated, and soul-infused personality. We have to reach in both directions, and so does hierarchy. They go towards Shambhala, and they go towards humanity, and we, in our own lesser way, have to go also in that direction towards pure being, and also to be effective in the world of becoming. So intuition, I repeat, is the synthetic understanding, which is the prerogative of the soul, and it only becomes possible when the soul, on its own level, is reaching in two directions, towards the monad and towards the integrated and perhaps even if only temporarily, coordinated and at one personality. It is the first indication, the intuition is, of a deeply subjective unification, which will find its consummation at the third initiation. And of course, you know, when we read that, we realize that we don't have to be third degree initiates to begin cultivating the intuition. As a matter of fact, you know, even spiritual, spiritual instinct, which is prevalent at the first degree, is an aspect of the intuition. So from the time we begin this infusion of some Buddhic energy into our system, into our consciousness, when we begin to the initiatory process, even if only the initiations of the threshold, we are already beginning to deal with the intuition. And between the second and the third initiation, it becomes very important to transcend the aroused intellect and the spiritual mind and all of that, and really enter into the intuition. So intuition, I mean, this is so beautiful. Just amazing things are said here. Intuition is a comprehensive grip of the principle of universality. Now look, since Aquarius is the sign of universality, we can imagine that during the Aquarian age, with its very powerful connection with Uranus and also with Neptune too, as one of the veiled rulers, we're going to get a lot of this sense of the universal, and thus of the comprehensive grip which intuition is. Intuition is a comprehensive grip of the principle of universality. And when it is functioning, there is, momentarily at least, a complete loss of the sense of separateness. Now here we are working on what we're calling the glamour of separateness. It's really, in a way, the illusion of separateness leading to the glamour of, you know, hatred and repulsion and all those more emotional states. We are working on these things, and so we can see how much it is necessary for us to understand the intuition and to begin to cultivate it, and every day to sense somehow the oneness of all variety which we seem to be seeing. Blotting out all form, hiding all difference, blotting out all form. Rule 9 in the 14 advanced rules for disciples and initiates tell the story about this. So when there is intuition, momentarily at least, a complete loss of the sense of separateness. At its highest point, this is very beautiful and interesting, and it's Buddhic and monadic. At its highest point, it is known as that universal love which has no relation to sentiment or to the affectional reaction. Now, what can we call this, you know? What does he mean here? This is liking, and disliking. It has no relation to that, but is predominantly in the nature of an identification with all beings. So you see, you know, identify as being, that group that we have going, and maybe some of you want to join it. This is the theme. How do we identify with all beings? And what does that mean? And what does it feel like? And he says, tells us that unless we can fully and completely identify with at least one person, we cannot approach identification in a larger sense. And this means getting beyond all the liking and the disliking that frequently are involved when we are dealing person to person. Then is true compassion known. Then does criticism become impossible. So maybe that tells us how far we are from the true intuition. Then only is the divine germ, which is the very core and heart of the monad, then only is the divine germ seen as latent in all forms. You know, there's a triangle, and it's will, wisdom, and activity, and that's what the monad's all about. But at the very center of that triangle is a point of pure being, which I think can be called the divine germ, and is really an expression of the ray of the absolute, ultimately, which is what we all are. So I find this to be so beautiful. A comprehensive grip of the principle of universality, a complete loss of the sense of separateness. In the beginning, you know, the sunrise is a little unstable. Occasionally a ray flashes forth. We don't always have that complete loss of the sense of separateness, but sometimes we do. And at its highest point, it is known as that universal love, which has no relation to sentiment or to affectional reaction. It's not about desire. It's not about I like you or I don't like you, or I love you or I don't love you. It's something more. To see all beings, all sentient beings, all beings are sentient, to see all beings in the prevailing universality, which ultimately is homogeneous. It's all the same thing. The only one thing, as the divine Pimander tells us, you know, the only one thing. And all this variety is part of the only one thing. And to see all beings within that is to stimulate the universal love. But it is predominantly, I think I lost something here. In the nature, I lost that, okay. It is predominantly in the nature of an identification with, and I like to use the word as. I often tell people, okay, you can identify with something, and it implies duality. I identify with that. But if I identify as that, I have bridged the gap between the one who identifies and that with which the one identifies. In other words, I am that. So I always use the word identify as that because I think it has a way of stimulating the kind of apprehension which we need. So it's in the nature of an identification with all beings. Then is true compassion known. Then does criticism become impossible. Then only is the divine germ seen as latent in all forms. I'll read just a little bit more. Intuition is light itself, the source of revelation. And when it is functioning, the world is seen as light. Well, you know, the whole universe is a precipitation of light. Light is tangible. Light is the very substance of the universe, or at least one type of substance. Everything we think we see, all the different atoms, all the different molecules, all the different combinations, it's all precipitated, condensed light, all of it. So we say precipitated, condensed light. That's what everything is. We are light. We have come to light, and the only time that light does not function is as the absolute itself, which has no need of light and no need of consciousness. It goes beyond consciousness entirely into the realm of purest infinite being. But those are words, and you know, we have to just have get a grasp of what they might mean, and it will take time for all of us. Intuition is the light itself, and when it is functioning, the world is seen as light, and the light body of all forms become gradually apparent. So we begin to see the luminosity which underlies the apparent density of the forms which we perceive, and this brings with it the ability to contact the light center in all forms. And thus again, an essential relationship is established, and the sense of superiority and separateness recedes into the background. You know, one individual or one being may have started the journey into tangibility at an earlier time than another, but we're all the same thing. And you know, the whole sense of superiority and separateness shows us that we are trapped by the illusion of relativity. We have to deal with relativity. We have to make a design here that reflects the divine archetype, and it requires relativity. But the ultimate thing is there's just no difference. And if you feel superior to a person or superior to an animal, you know, is a solar angel busy feeling superior to us? Is a planetary logos busy feeling superior to a solar angel, and on and on and on? No, the sense of identification is so strong that we realize we are these different, apparently different beings expressing through a ladder of forms. And one day we just realize that apparently high or low, it's all one being, which eventually retracts into itself. So I'm going to stop here because, you know, there's a lot to think about here, a great deal to think about. So this is the end of the reading for this Dissipation of Glamour webinar, number 25. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brett or Joe.
That's right.
That's correct. Thank you. And this is Thanksgiving Day here in the United States. Hope you've all had a good one if you are in the United States or just in general, you know. And there are three different aspects of the intuition, and I feel that they are so important that I cannot get into them right now. We have enough to think about right now. So, you know, we daringly think about these higher states towards which we are all striving. And when we have achieved the intuition, at least in its relative expression at the third degree, then that's the really first time, except for momentarily here and there, when that prevailing sense of fragmentation, of separateness, of distinction, you know, hiding all difference, blotting out all form, okay. It doesn't mean we become ineffective. No, we still have the illusory consciousness, which we have to deal with to make all things reflect the archetypes on the monadic and logoic planes. We have to do that. But forever afterwards, we know we're looking at perceiving being the only one thing, the only one thing. And this doesn't mean we fly into some kind of responsibility subduing mysticism. Mysticism's okay, but you know, we're not saying, oh, it's all one, everything's great. You know, we have a job to do to re-render the world of illusion into the world of archetypes, to make the world of becoming reflect the world of being, to make the mosaic world of parts and pieces and particles into the seamless world of archetypes. We have a job to do. But at the same time, we never forget that all is one, as is so tritely said, but we actually begin to realize it. Okay, friends, so now this will be our time. We're working with illusion. We're working with the true nature of intuition. We're working with these things, and it's the time maybe to think about them together, of being and becoming, I can't get this all under our eye at the same time, no matter how hard I try. You know, it's not possible. There's too much here. But maybe what I can do is make at least some of it a little smaller, and hopefully it will still be visible, you know. So let's see what I can do here to render this into something too small to be seen. All right, well, not maybe not too small to be seen. Anyway, that part that we've been dealing with in the definition of intuition is here, and then I did a little bit of review as to what we had done before, being and becoming. So, before we get into our, this is such an important section. You know, in many of the classes, you know, that Tui and I have taught in Finland, or that I've taught in, well, various places earlier in the University of Seven Rays, I always like to go to this section, because it really starts the glamour book off, and it's so deep, and it's so, if I can put it like this, so disillusioning. We don't stay attached to smaller definitions of big things, which is part of illusion itself. In fact, we really begin to see how great intuition is and how it's like Isis. It puts Osiris back together. Typhon, the principle of ignorance, has cut Osiris into 14 pieces. It's a very important number in Egyptian mythology and occultism. And that's the whole world cut into fragmentary perception. Everything we see is different from everything else, and we can't put it back together. But intuition is like Isis, and intuition puts Osiris back together. And that's what we all have to do. Once we knew it, and even now on the higher planes, we know it, but we descended into fragmentation, and everything looks different from everything else. But when the intuition comes, aha, boom, you know, however short it may be, wait, it's all one thing. It's all one thing, you know. And in the divine Pymander and the words of Hermes Trismegistus, the four, you know, the present master are, it's the only one thing. So we have to work with the parts and pieces, and we have to work with the whole simultaneously. And that's the kind of duality that we have to deal with in a practical sense as we journey through any particular universe and all of its perceptions. So, your thoughts, friends, your questions, your thoughts, there's just a lot to think about here. And there's, you know, we're students of occultism. That's what we are. It takes many lives to be a true master of occultism. I'm sure Master DK has been studying a lot longer and harder than any of us would want to. But he made it, and others made it, and he's among the most learned of the masters, and he's given us a tremendous gift. So we can really, during the next 8 or 9 years, during the closing period of the Forerunner, we can absorb a lot in preparation for the third installment, you know, and even more will be revealed. We are on a journey into ever-increasing and intense light. And, of course, the light of the intuition, the higher Mercury, the transcendental mind, will reveal worlds which in our encapsulated state we thought never existed. Okay, so your thoughts, your questions, your statements about anything, whether it's this or something you've been thinking about in relation to glamour, whatever, this is your free time to offer your what you might want to deal with. Okay. Be brave, whatever, you know. Just don't ever be frightened to speak. Okay, so anyway, this is Rebecca, right? Is there a connection with doing the triangle meditations and visualizations, revelation, and dissipating glamour? For example, does the triangle work help to dissipate glamour, perhaps indirectly? And I'm sure that, you know, not only I have something to say about this, but I know that Tuya does also. So, you know, what is my answer, Rebecca? Yes. My answer is yes. because when the etheric body of a human being or of a larger domain within the planet or of the planet itself changes into a pattern of triangles, it is congruent with the higher worlds, with the world of the threefold soul and with the world of the threefold triad and with the world of the threefold monad. And there is a harmonious alignment, a resonant alignment with those higher threefold figures. And thus, when these higher states of consciousness descend into our mechanism, because the way has been cleared for them, of course, we see more clearly, and the dissipation of glamour is more effectively accomplished. So the triangle is very useful in the deeper understanding, such as the soul and the higher triangles already have. We poor people, we're down here in the square. We are a threefold personality, but put it all together and you've got the fourfold personality. And we understand in the square, but now we're converting to understand as the triangles understand. And the soul is a triangle, the spiritual triad is a triangle, the monad is a triangle, and even, you know, up on the very highest level, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, Mother, it's a triangle. And when the energies flow triangularly, we see much more clearly. So that's why, in fact, all these things that Tui and I are doing, these five presentations, four of them are broadcast and one of them is a webinar, and there'll be more coming. All of these are interrelated, absolutely interrelated. They're really one thing to make hierarchical workers out of us and to develop in us the hierarchical consciousness. Tuya, would you like to say something about this from your perspective? Are these, is there a connection with doing the triangles, meditation, visualizations, revelation, and the dissipating of glamour? Do you have anything you want to add to that? Are you there? Yep, you are.
You hear me?
Yes, we do. Good. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm on the phone now, so that's okay. Good that the connection is open.
It's
yeah,
very good.
I'm thinking about two ways, like you were saying, the when we are working our way and trying to get the contact, whenever we work that way, is one sure thing that the dissipation of glamour will happen. But this would always amazes me is that how the Buddhas of activity can work through the triangles in the time of emergencies. So I think that there is also not only the great Buddhas, but also how the higher ones, the masters, and the master can affect the triangle work and the members whenever we are building. Mm-hmm. When we are building the Antakarana the same way, that we have to build through these worlds of clamor, and then that strengthening which is coming above. So I think that there is absolutely that great possibility and also opportunity for all of us when we stand in our triangle work and work it continuously every day. That is what is going to dissipate also the clamors. And also when we think about the whole triangle work, how much these members are then together connected, and the discussion about the experiences when we become sharper in our sensitivity, that is also which is dissipating all that what is something helping us to see our patterns, what we are doing by ourselves that we don't even think about automatically. But then when we have these open discussions with our spiritual friends to see, because DK said about that, that we don't see the glamours in their own ways, but we see the effect of them. And when we are able to nail this effect that we see around us, so I think that is also which is helping in the triangle work when the people are really working closely together. Very important thing.
Yeah, all of this, you know, again, if we see things only separately, you know, like, I'll exaggerate. Okay, triangles is one thing. Reappearance of the Christ is another thing. The glamour is another thing. The souls of nations is another thing. The money for hierarchical purpose. No, these things all reinforce each other, and there are probably others. The reason that I turned to this particular diagram, I think Tuya has a better one, but this will show the thing, is that even the Antikorana is a triangle. This whole structure here, connecting the mental unit to the very jewel in the lotus, to the monastic permanent atom, it is a triangle. So basically what we're doing is trying to resonantly clear the way for the kind of triangular energy which must enter into the personality and make of the personality really a soul. So the triangle work is, look, he said it's a work very close to my heart. He says, so close to my heart. If it's close to DK's heart, I have a feeling he's hinting there again about his own monad, to tell you the truth, because the monad is the heart, the etheric heart center of the solar logos is found on the monadic plane. So it is something that must go on. The Buddhas of activity have to have that emergency network. The masters, as Tuya was saying, have to be able to, throw energy in when it's needed. And DK says, I work with souls. Okay, I work with souls, not so much with personalities. He was very gracious. He helped some personalities, but he did work with souls. And the idea behind it is the soul is the triangle. So this is something, you know, let's build that network as rapidly as we can and as deeply as we can, and bring your friends into it and so forth, and let's really build that network up so that the higher powers can use it in the period of emergency into which we are surely heading at this time. Okay, thank you,
Tuya. By the way, Michael, one...
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
One addition to that, what DK said, that he's asking us to, every single morning, just quickly align with him,
yeah,
and thus creating the triangle of light by our soul, by our mental field, and by himself.
The master, the soul, and the personality. That's what you said. The master, the soul, and the personality, right? Those three align, is that it? Yeah, okay, right.
That's right.
Every morning.
Every single morning. And it's quick to do, so we all can strengthen that. So he's talking in that place about himself, but I'm sure that one can align or visualize that with one's own master. But anyway, I think, and I suggest that we all would do every morning this quick meditation and hold that in our... by the creative mind.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, look, friends, our occult work is increasing these next 8.5 years. That must be obvious, right? I mean, you know, none of us is the leader of a country, a senator, whatever, you know, working on the outer level, whatever. We are esoteric workers. We are occult workers, and we know a little. And the demand for our type of work is going to intensify, and it would be irresponsible of us not to do our very best in group formation to save humanity from itself or from another war. Remember what he said, if the disciples had done their job, with sufficient intensity and sufficient numbers before the Second World War, it would not have precipitated. Okay, so we have our work cut out for us. We cannot let the third phase of the war, which is already raging on the psychological planes, we cannot let it precipitate onto the physical plane. That's where our occult work comes in. Okay, friends, yes, other, okay, here we have some.
There is.
Okay, let's see. There are some different questions, right, Brett?
There's a new question from Anna.
Okay, let's see what we got here. Okay. Okay. Here, I hope you can all see it. Thank you, Brett. Just a comment. Intuition is like a diamond when it is driven by our soul. It's certainly, you know, the diamond is the hardest thing, and it penetrates all things. Now, this one is from Frederick. So I'm just saying that, Frederick, and then we'll get to Anna's question or statement. It's like a diamond when it is driven by our soul. The diamond is the hardest substance. It cuts all, and there is nothing. You know, like, you know, Christ had amazing intuition, and it said of Christ, he knew what was in man. No ring-pass knots could stop his perception. Based upon identification, he could always cut through, blend through, merge through, whatever you want to call it. He always knew what was behind the barrier. Okay, now, so this one, this is it, Brett, right? So intuition, as DK defines it, is a registration of an instant alignment between the monad, the soul, and the integrated personality of a human being. Well, if that gives you the sense of universality, then that is a higher form of the intuition. Some forms of intuition reveal relationship as it truly exists on the archetypal plane. And still higher forms of intuition will reveal the absolute homogeneous oneness of all things, regardless of their harmonious or inharmonious relations. So, in a way, Anna, indeed, this type of alignment that you're speaking of would reflect quite a high stage of intuition if the monad is involved. So intuition, as DK defines it, is a registration of an instant alignment between the monad, the soul, and the integrated personality of a human being. Yes, okay, that's repeated twice. And I would say, if those three factors are in alignment, then you will not only have the revelation through pure reason of the true nature of relationship on the archetypal planes, but you will also have the revelation of an inviolable, absolute oneness in the world of being, which is quite a high thing. You know, of course, we say what's high. High things are, what can I say? They are on the cosmic physical plane. And what lies beyond that, even Master DK doesn't know, although he talks a little bit about it. Let's just say our highest revelations on the cosmic physical plane are going to be kindergarten compared to what's going on when we enter the cosmic astral and cosmic mental planes. So yes, I'd say you have a good point there, and let's try to achieve that type of alignment through pure reason and through the perception of absolute identicality of all things perceived. Then we have the alignment. Okay. Right. Thank you, Anna. So, and I commented on what Frederick had said. So yes, we cut through somehow. And it's the state of what you call the diamond soul. Now, when is the diamond soul achieved? It begins at the third initiation, but by the time the fourth initiation has occurred, all of the synthesis petals have unfolded. Those are the inner three, right? And they've all unfolded, and they have revealed the jewel before the destruction of the egoic body. Thus, the diamond soul at the fourth initiation. Now, it looks like a couple of other things have come up from Frederick. When we are aligned with our soul, 100% diamond soul. Okay, yeah, and that's just on the verge of destruction. You know, sometimes we think the third initiation gives us that necessary alignment. It's only 75%. At the fourth initiation, we become the true diamond soul, The sense of universality is rapidly increasing. The Buddhic energy is very powerful and is part of the method of destroying the second aspect of divinity, part of the method of destroying the Temple of Solomon, the causal body, and so forth. A complete alignment of the fourth degree. Now look, none of us is pushing the fourth degree, okay? We have so much to do to become truly illumined beings and to have a full treasury within our causal body and so forth. But the day will come when we will be the true diamond soul. Yeah. Okay, what else, Brett? Anything?
Nothing at the moment.
Okay. Silence in the deep. Okay. But thank you. You know, thank you, friends. A little, any more thoughts that you may have before we get into our meditation about, hatred and separateness? It's just, we have, look, on our planet, our little planet, this is a planet of redemption. It's the hospital. It's the hospital in the solar system. And, the planet of releasing sorrow and purifying pain and the maximum of suffering that you can get in our solar system. Mars is, has that too. Saturn has that too. But the Earth has the most, according to DK. So somehow we are working with energies which just have to be redeemed if the solar logos is to make his move not only towards his fourth cosmic initiation, he hasn't even achieved three, we're told, but possibly, if things go well, towards the fifth, towards mastership of a master solar logos. And is Sirius already a master solar logos? Well, maybe. Just the way Venus is very close to mastership in a planetary sense. And we have to help. We're very important in this process. We little Earth beings, the base of the spine center of the solar logos in our solar system. And, obviously we're involved with the fifth initiation if he can achieve it. That means we have to work very hard too. Over millions of years, okay? So are you ready? Okay. Is any of us ready? Anything else, Brett? Don't see anything at the moment. Am I missing something or someone? I think not.
I can see.
Okay. Okay, well, look, this is a very deep section. It's a beautiful section, and we're going to continue with it next time. We're going to talk next time. We're going to continue here. Dealing with illumination, understanding, and love. And let's just say that these three factors can be mixed up so easily, but we're going to try to get the truly occult understanding of what this, what these terms mean. We are entering into soul illumined work, if we can do it, and our work of building the Antikarana has to be going on, and I just want to, if some of you are not involved yet with the Moria Federation, we're entering our ninth year. We have a very comprehensive program which attempts to approximate somewhat the beautiful curriculum which Master DK laid out in Letters on Occult Meditation for the preparatory schools of initiation, really. And, it's an eight-year program. It depends on where you enter. For some people, it may be 5 years. For some, maybe 7 years. For some, maybe 8 years. And for others, you can take as long as you want, okay? But we begin on December 21st, and, I just have to say that if you are highly motivated to study in depth, then I think we have a very good program for you. Of course, the Arcane School has an excellent program. I can't say not, but ours is a very comprehensive program, and many of the areas of DK's writings, which are not covered in the Arcane School by deliberate choice, are included in what we offer: psychology, astrology, healing, things of those nature, things which have to do with the treatise on the seven rays. The Arcane School, of course, does offer a lot in the rays and the initiations in their very advanced program. But the earlier books, emphasis is not so much there. Cosmic fire is somewhere there, but we've been as comprehensive and as deep as we can go. And I'd certainly like to invite you to, you know, some of you are more advanced students and so forth, to look at, go to our website, which is moriafederation.com, all one word, and just see what the applications look like and see if you really want to plunge in for some demanding work during these next 8.5 years, which finish up the era of the Forerunner. And of course, well ahead of time, I'd love to invite you to our new conference, the 31st conference of the University of Seven Rays, Seven Ray Institute, and now the Moria Federation. We're in a new venue, I think a very beautiful venue. We've been 15 years at the Dobson Hotel, and it has served its purpose, and now we've moved to the San Marcos Resort. Well, some of you, if it just gets, the pressure gets too much, you can go play golf or something. I love golf. But if you want to just stick with the subject, we will have a very, I think, enriching conference on the will and the way. A first-ray conference, because it's a first-ray year. 2017, number one, the will and the way. So I'd like to invite you, you know, in plenty of time. And I just want to say that we're also going to have a WASAC festival meditation and work there. This is for many, many reasons. We don't want to step on anybody's toes. We know that everybody has their own WASAC, but many things about scheduling and all that made it more advisable to do this in May. Everything's air-conditioned, okay? Do this in May when the WASAC Festival is occurring. So I think it will go very deep, because if you think about it, the will and the way, Shambhala, the WASAC, these are great ideas which all fit together. So, you know, to understand the divine will, we don't understand it. TK tells us we don't understand it, but we have to make the effort to do so. So, you know, our invitations go out to you to join the Moria Federation, to come and attend, I think, a very rich program that we always have, I think we do, and the pre-conference, of course, on the ceremonial arts, which Tuya leads, and the esoteric astrology pre-conference, which a team of, 8 or 9 very good esoteric astrologers from all over the world is led by them, and also then the advancing seven-ray seminar, and this time I think we're going to be into some of the advanced Antikorana work in terms of the rays. So please put that in your book and think about it, and to show up in person, meet your fellow disciples and so forth. Love to see you there. That's my plug for the moment, okay? Are there any other questions or thoughts that you would like to share at this point before we begin our meditation? Or from our staff, you're welcome to speak if you wish. And Olivia offers her apologies today. She's with family in San Francisco, and she said she wouldn't be able to make it. But, you know, normally Tuya, Olivia, and I try to keep sponsoring this work, this glamour work. And by the way, now also my, you know, I have to say this. I realize I speak in English. It's what I can do. And, you know, and many of you are nationals of other countries. And so I know sometimes I speak fast. You know, and occasionally, you know, we're going to have the meditation in, along with other languages as well, specifically Finnish, probably, because of our work in Finland. But I know that it's not for everybody your first language, but I'm very grateful that you are making every effort to follow what is said, you know, and even to read DK in the original language. Very useful, because his mastery of the English language is superb, and he's layered in so many things that maybe will not appear in other translations. So that's just to say that I know that we have many people with other languages as their first language. Anything else going on here, Brett, before we begin?
We have a comment from Frederick.
Okay. Okay. So let's see what it says here. The French book of this book can be found at. Okay, good. Excellent. You know, look, we've had fine translation efforts in French. And, you know, you can see that, everybody, you know, I've got it on the screen, and you can probably, I don't know, can you copy it off the screen, or maybe it can be put in, I can't speak that. I wonder if I can copy that. Can I copy that? I don't know, Brett and Joe, I don't know if I can, but let's give it a try. If I do not succeed, then...
Look on the message... the link, and it appears in the box below, and then you can copy that.
It appears in the box below. This PDF thing?
This?
Okay, good. I'll copy that. So thank you, Frederick. And that's just a reminder that in these many languages, Spanish, did I get it? Yeah, I did. Okay, there it is. French, Portuguese, German, Danish, Swedish, other languages, you know, excuse me if I leave yours out, really valiant efforts have been made to render the Alice Bailey work into the language where more people can appreciate it. But remember, you know, I can only say this. This is a very worthwhile effort and is a great introduction to many, many people. And the way it's written in English gives the Tibetan the best opportunity to be extremely subtle in his nuances to stimulate the intuition of the reader. So if you can also read the Tibetan in the English language, you know, just the way the secret doctrine was put into English, for whatever reason, it's become kind of a universal language on our earth at the moment, do so. Which is not to deny the value of your language and the fact that you can introduce many, many people, but for the absolute subtleties of what the Tibetan is layering in there, I would suggest that the English language can be very useful to you. And then, of course, look, you know, another thing too. If you are a national of another language and you are joining the Moria Federation or part of it, we are extending our program to have the curricula of the Moria Federation translated into various languages. We already have a wonderful Vietnamese group. Can you believe that? 30 people, 40 people from Vietnam, thanks to a very powerful disciple there who's acting as a magnet. And we have a powerful Portuguese group from Brazil and around. And other languages are in process of translation. So, yes, this is our attempt to spread the knowledge of the ageless wisdom through the necessity of translation, absolutely. And at the same time, I bring us back to the originals, which Alice Bailey and the Tibetan worked so hard to render in their unique form of English, which was a very high quality. So I think, you know, if you're also a reader of English, you will get maybe even more from your reading and understanding. Thank you, Frederick. Anything else, Brett? Are we okay? Am I audible? Okay. All right, now, so.
Yes.
Let us, I think we can go on now.
Yes.
So this is our work. And as I say, this meditation may sometimes be offered in English and in other languages as necessary. So we can't name necessarily all the group members right now, you know, because usually this is done for a group of nine. But we think of all of ourselves, you know, and maybe you have a picture of the people who are working there. You know, I'm running through it myself right now just to see who is there. Gratefully acknowledging your presence. And thinking of us as we are on all these different continents, Australasia, the Americas, Europe, and sometimes other parts of Asia, we just think about that connection, that worldwide connection, And in the silence, we deepen our soul connection with each other. Just a few minutes, not 10 minutes in this case, but just a few minutes. And in this silence, one can definitely feel the soul connection strengthening. I'm sure we all sense that. Now, as this is work that is not without risks, we use the protective formula. And we say together, you can say it aloud in your own place as you're on mute or self-mute. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. Now let's do that, making the divine cross. I'll get this down here a little bit so it's seen easier. Remember the long-armed cross. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And this is a special cross which he asks us to make, and he has explained it. We have studied that. We enter the three preparatory stages, and we focus the etheric physical light of matter and the light of mind. We focus that with our creative imagination. We focus that on the plane of mind, in the mental body. So we have vitality, and we have the ability to analyze and to understand the light of mind. They are together, they are brought together on the plane of mind. Now, we meditate on soul contact, and we recognize, through our creative imagination, we recognize soul light. And we bring in an active imaginative fusion, the two lesser lights together with the soul light, all on the plane of mind. We use the creative imagination to see and feel this, bringing the three lights together. When these three lights are imaginatively together, we say, followed by the sacred word three times, the light is one, and in that light we shall see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. So we know the light of day, which is the light of the intuition, will eventually be revealed by our triple light. Then we enter the formula itself, and as a group, we say these things together, but as we do so, as it says below here, we visualize the great searchlight that we have created, turning its light upon the astral plane. So the Tibetan says, as these words are said, the formula, we visualize our great beam of light turned out upon the astral plane. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. So we visualize that beam doing its work. We connecting two worlds, the world of light, the world of glamour. We're working with soul potency as it works through the vitalized mind. And then, in this pause, we invoke the spiritual will. We know it comes from the monad ultimately via the atmic plane, via the jewel and the lotus, via the will petal, will synthesis petal, and via the sacrifice petals, and the head and the base of the spine on both the astral and etheric planes. We invoke the spiritual will. And we say to confirm this invocation, with power upon its beam,
the light
The light is focused on the goal. So the beam, our beam is reinforced by the spiritual will, a very strong, irresistible power, really the will to good. And now the light is going to be thrown into the glamour that we are dissipating. It's really an illusion which has become a glamour, but these words are significant. The glamour of hatred and the glamour of separativeness or separateness. So, now we think together, and as we say these powerful words, these words of power, we are going to visualize the light penetrating into the glamour, these dark clouds, producing its weakening and its dissipation. So, together. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. Now, for the next 5 minutes of silence, and with intensity of purpose, we see the work proceeding, our beam weakening and dissipating the glamour which we're working with. So in your own way, we use the group beam, participate in the group beam, the will-reinforced group beam, and see the glamour weakening, dissipating, and the sun will shine. Now we refocus ourselves upon the mental plane, and we turn our attention away from the astral plane. We withdraw our beam, and we turn off the light, the triple light. We know what we've been doing. We've been attacking by occult methods the causes of so much world difficulty. The glamour which reflects the great heresy of separateness. And we will continue. So now, our searchlight is shut off. We remind ourselves we're in the alignment with the soul. We're realizing the sun of unity and of love. And we sound the Om three times as these energies penetrate every aspect of our personality and the personality of humanity. Thank you, friends, for joining us. We continue with our ASK programs. Two more broadcasts coming this week, and we're on the 6 a.m. GMT schedule. And, you know, if that's not possible for you, you can pick it up on Makara after Brett posts it. And I think, well, tomorrow is the Souls of Nations invocation. And we've been working, I don't know what two-year you have planned, but we've been working on the tragedy going on in Aleppo and some of these other Mosul, some of these cities which are points of intense conflagration at the moment. And then Sunday, attracting money for hierarchical purposes. Here in the United States, of course, it's the night before when we're doing the early morning schedule. And in South America, well, it's the wee hours. Australia, it's okay. Yeah, to you. Go ahead.
Yes, I am going to do the Aleppo
thing
again.
Okay. Okay. Good. And one of our friends advised us that the fighting in Mosul, or Mosul, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, is very intense. And, you know, people are being used as human shields, and there's all kinds of barbarity going on. And, you know, Syria is a very serious place, because when you look at the prophecies, it says that the Armageddon will be fought in Syria. So, of course, DK considered the whole First and Second World Wars as aspects of the Armageddon. But like I say, Phase 3 cannot be allowed to participate. So, to precipitate. So thank you very much for your presence. And then next week we will switch to the PM time. And, you know, stay alert to our occasional webinars, which involve the full moon work and other special festival days. And Tuya, I'd like to ask you to remain online, and also Brett and Joe for a few minutes. And just saying goodbye to everybody. And thanking you for your presence. So I'll turn off the recording now, and you can make your exit, and the program will continue. We're just going to do a little conferring on some other matters. So bye-bye for now, and thank you for your work and your presence. Bye-bye.